Now, we were talking yesterday in the programme about the centenary of the anniversary of the death of Michael Collins in Ballinabhlaw in Cork. There was another ceremony which took place in Glasnevin yesterday, another state ceremony remembering the man who was key in the fight for Ireland's independence. Well, with me to talk about this in more detail. Now, what happened on the day and other aspects of it are two members of the Collins clan, shall we call them. We've got Robert Pearce, grandnephew of Michael Collins, and also we have Garrod Pearce, Robert's son, who was at the event and also interacted with those who were booing and jeering. A number of you getting in touch with us yesterday in the programme about the boos you could hear when Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, and Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, was speaking on the programme. Good morning to both of you, and Garrod, thanks for coming into us here in studio. I'll start with you. You Robert couldn't make it to the event. We'll talk to Robert in a moment, but you were there. What was the event like, and what happened when you heard the boos?
Yeah, so myself and my brothers, Micheál and Richard, and my three kids, we went down, and we sat amongst the crowd, and over just a few, about 5 or 10 metres away from us was, you know, people waving Republican flags, shall we say. Yeah. And I was actually delighted because I thought, you know, Michael Collins doesn't belong to any one particular party or any one particular strain or interpretation of history. I was actually delighted to see what I thought were Sinn Féin or Republican Sinn Féin people at the event. But I very quickly realised once Micheál Martin appeared and they started booing, and particularly what they were saying, these people were actually the exact opposite as what you would actually expect from Sinn Féin. I just wanted to put the record straight, because after the event there was people saying,
some people were suggesting it
wasn't. And I guess the easiest way of classifying these people is that they would be the kind of Trump or Brexit equivalent in Ireland itself. Some of the comments that they were making, for example, was when the soldier fainted, there was a chorus of, oh, well, that's the vaccine, you know, that's to blame for that. So like conspiracy theory type things. They were saying things like, you know, when Leo Varadkar was speaking, you know, saying that LGBT values were being instilled into school children, things like that. I have three school children and myself, and I think it's fantastic what's been taught to them about different types of family structures and everything like that.
Yeah, but these people were against that idea.
So they were, you know, conspiracy theorists, they were anti-LGBT, they were also, you know, very insular, I would say. They were shouting things like, how's the Irish? You know, how's the Irish? Initially, I thought it was, how are the Irish getting on?
Yeah.
But what they were actually talking was, provide houses to, you know,
how's
to Irish,
the Irish?
You know, yeah, how's
not,
the Irish?
Not like, how's everybody? How's the Irish people?
I was saying, look, I was thinking to myself, well, how's the Irish? We're not doing too badly when you think about it since 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear that, you know, that's the kind of people who were making the disruption here. And, you know, again, I would say, you know, I was a little bit disappointed that it wasn't Sinn Féin. You know, I would love to see Sinn Féin and other Republican type people at these events.
In a supportive way.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You talked to them. You spoke to some of them.
What happened then was there was a couple of people, let's just say, from the mainstream crowd who were then started shouting back at them. And I just said, look, I'll go over here. And I suppose, I wanted to kind of just say to them, look, this is not just a kind of a commemoration for, you know, a group of people. Yeah, but also it's actually a family event as well. And,
yeah,
you know, we had met a lot of long, and actually after a while, you know, they actually did quieten down a little bit. You know, I had a little bit of stress, but they kicked off again, which was a little bit disappointing. And look, I said to them as well, you know, I suppose their main gripe really, and if you would have been against, they would have classified themselves as anti-globalisation. You know, they see an awful lot of problems in this country, and they would see Leo Varadkar and, let's just say, Micheál Martin as having sold out the sovereignty that, you know, Michael Collins and, you know, all the other Republicans at that time had
fought so hard for.
And I said to him, look, I also see problems with globalization. Globalization has been going on since the start of humankind. And, you know, it's not that I disagree with you, but it's not the way to get your message across. And they said, look, we're being stonewalled, the media isn't allowed us, and all that kind of stuff. And look, I said to him, a perfect example of where globalization is really a bad thing is, you were speaking earlier on about the energy crisis. For example, Bitcoin. I work in IT myself. Bitcoin is, for me, nothing better than a virus on computers, right? But do you know, for example, that, you know, Bitcoin takes 150 terawatts of energy, which is effectively the full energy requirement of the country of Argentina, okay, of 45 million people. You know, that's something where we, as an individual country, and all individual countries seem to be incapable of saying, can
no,
we stop?
Yeah, no. This is too exactly, energy yeah. heavy. This that's is not right, yeah. good. It's yeah. a, it's impacting on poor people in the yeah. world and people right. struggling to pay yeah. their bills because it's consuming so much of energy that we
and,
have.
And we're all talking about how to save energy in small little things, but why don't we tackle, for example, Bitcoin?
The big
and that's
problems.
Just one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I do not by any means, I agree there is problems with globalization. I agree that they need to be addressed. But at this particular event, it was not, in my way, the way we're going about it, the right way of doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you were trying to say, look, this is a family event as yeah. well as everything else.
Yeah.
Here's not the place to be booing live
exactly.
on television
right.
and marring the event like that. You feel, though, that it was important to talk to them,
absolutely.
To hear their views, because
no.
that's what was that what Michael Collins would have done? He would have heard either side
and,
of the
you know, absolutely, Jerry, because, I mean, if you look back 100 years ago, what happened in the year or two after the Civil War was here in Kerry, for example, where there was terrible things happened on both sides. You know, they all got together, played for the Kerry team, put on the green and gold, and they moved on. And what you see now is, you know, political parties, different political parties for their own particular agendas are kind of, you know, saying, let's not talk with those people or we could never do a deal with them and all this kind of thing. And, you know, I'd like to put the hand of friendship, you know, as a, you know, descendant or a relative of Michael Collins. On my way back home, actually, from the event, I was passing, I live in Phoenix, and I was passing through Spa, and there was a, you know, Republican commemoration of Tom Flynn, who was killed in August as well,
yeah.
During the Phoenix landings, you know, and
yeah.
I'd love to see the day, you know, it was great and all that, that Micheál Martin came along to the Michael Collins event, but I'd love to see the day where, you know, at Republican, you know, events and, you know, at Michael Collins type events, that we could all look back on that period of history and say, look, they were all doing what they thought was right,
was the right
at the
thing.
Time. You know, people like Tom Flynn who gave their lives for Ireland, you know, it was a small commemoration. I just happened to be passing it, but I would love to be attending those kind of things as well. And we all need to move on and we all need to see the other side and talk with the other side, whether it's here
yeah.
in the south or whether it's up in the north. Where
that's going to be a big issue if we're to get to a united Ireland.
Absolutely.
Which is being pushed by various different people.
Yeah.
That's really going to be a real test
yeah.
of seeing the other side and seeing if we can all move on together as an island.
Correctly. And I mean, years ago, I voted for Mary Lou myself. I went for an MEP. I voted for, you know, Martin McGuinness for president. And,
yeah.
you know, I mean, Deirdre Farr is a fantastic representative out here. And, you know, across parties, people like Jimmy Maloney, Fianna Fáil, and Liz Dole, and Brendan yeah. Griffin, these are absolutely fantastic public representatives across all. And I'm just saying, you know, let's all recognise the hard work that all of our public representatives are doing, and especially the ones that are reaching out to the other side.
Yeah.
So I suppose what I was doing here, of course I wasn't happy. In fact, my two children got, you know, started crying and things like that.
They were upset,
you know,
at what happened.
Yeah, because some of the language being used by these, you know, I would call them kind of far-right people was, you know,
quite upsetting,
just
and
just
that's not family-friendly.
It's profanities
not
and all that kind of stuff. And it's just the main point about, you know, what happened there and those protests, everybody should know who these people were and they should know what their real opinions were, and that they had no consideration for kids and for, you know, kind of not using bad language and things like that. So I just want people to know who
yeah.
it is that we're doing
no,
that.
No, fair yeah. play. And yeah. it's good to get that perspective yeah. on it yeah. in relation to what you saw. Okay, stay with us, Gerard. We're going to talk with Robert Pearce as well in relation to how the actual event went. We'll get to that and more after we take these.
It's almost 10 o'clock. Noix Newman's Tralee. A great excuse to change your kitchen.
It's Noix Newman's Kitchen Floors, Decks and Doors.
Kerry Today on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with KWD Recycling. Collecting waste and recycling at your door.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why.
The EuroMillions jackpot is an estimated 85 million euro. Play responsibly, in-store, in-app, or at lottery.ie. The National Lottery. It could be you.
New this week in Home Store and More. All clothes hangers are all half price. And remember, all our office chairs and desks are also still all half price. Do you want to upgrade your home office? Get a more comfortable office chair and a modern space-saving desk? Or do your kids start in college and need their room kitted out? We have a wide range of half-price office chairs and desks to choose from. But hurry, because when all our half-price office chairs and desks are gone, they're gone. Shop in-store or online. Home Store and More. A happy home.
You have made us Kerry's most popular radio station. And for that, we want to say a thousand thanks.
We have a winner! 1,000 euro! Kathleen from Lickstadt. Congratulations!
Oh, yeah! Well done! That's Suzanne Maloney, Doreen Killarney.
We're teaming up with Quinlan's Fish to give our loyal listeners the chance to win some tasty Quinlan's vouchers or an overall weekly prize of €1,000. Thanks a thousand on Radio Kerry in association with Quinlan's Fish. Keep listening for your chance to win. Call Kerry today on 066 712366.
Yeah, give us your views and comments coming into us on the show on 066 712366. You can text and WhatsApp us on 083 300 3300. We want to hear from you on the programme. With me in our studio here in Tralee, I've got Garrod Pearce, I've got Robert Pearce on the line. Robert, good morning to you, thanks for joining me this morning. You couldn't make the event yourself because of health issues, but tell me what your views are, how it was remembered and how you feel after all of it now.
Yeah, I thought it was conducted very well and I thought the speeches were very good. I particularly, Micheál Martin, I thought was very good. And the whole thing was conducted very well. But Garrod has dealt with there with the, I suppose, the cranks.
Yeah.
Who had were trying to disrupt everything. But you see, there's so much negativity. And my mother would have been proud of it. Actually, I was very sorry I couldn't go, and I was going to go on Friday. I had a bit of a health issue, and I just couldn't go.
Sure.
Because I was to present that read there on behalf of the Collins family as being the oldest person who's on his feet. My brother John, who unfortunately is very ill, would have been the man to go, but that wasn't to be. Because we had, of course, great memories from my mother. Not now, but when we were young, you know, my mother would not speak to us about Michael Collins. She would never allow us to go to Grasnevin. It was too painful for her to go to the grave there. Like, we'd go to Dublin and we'd ask to go out, and she wouldn't. Because, actually, if you got talking to my mother about her Uncle Michael, she'd start crying. I have an interesting book I got Tim Pat Coogan's book on Michael Collins in 1990. And that was the time that Woodfield, which was the old family home where Michael was born and reared, and used to come down. My mother used to meet him. But
yeah.
President Hillary, who was, of course, a Fianna Fáil nominee for president, but a very open, decent man, he reopened the thing. My mother had been the only person who knew the exact location of the old house where the door was and so on.
What was your mother's name, Robert?
She was Mary Collins Pearce.
And what age was she when he died?
Well, she met him the morning he was shot. She was 13.
Yes.
She was born in 1909.
Yeah.
And she was in town with her sister Kitty and her father Sean. Sean was Michael's oldest brother. He was 14 or 15 years older than him. You see, Michael's father died when Michael was 6, and Sean, my grandfather, was sort of the elder brother, father figure in his life. And my mother recounted how during particularly the War of Independence, he used to come down to Woodfield exhausted, and he'd always bring the children a bag of bullseye sweets.
Yeah.
And he'd be wrestling with the local men and that sort of thing, and it seemed to revive him. He'd be gone after a few days. But on the morning of the 22nd of August, 1922, our father took Kitty and Mary into Clonakilty to buy clothes. They were going to go to school up in Wicklow, a Dominican convent. You see, there were a lot of replies since that time. It was very bitter. My mother had gone through, she was the oldest child in that family.
Yeah.
And she had gone through, of course, raids by the British, and now there were raids by the Irish. So my grandfather decided to ship him off up to Cork. And Michael arrived, and my mother remembered Michael saying to my father, I hope there'll be a meeting in the next few days, possibly today, when this thing might be all sorted out.
Yeah, that was the hope. That was it. That's what he was trying to
do. That was his hope, you see. And he was trying to really get down into the heartland of anti-treaty, which was West Cork. And, of course, he never believed that he'd be shot. But anyway, at the heel of the hunt, when he was going away, he was talking to the girls that he'd see them in Wicklow, that he'd often be down in Wicklow, and he knew where the convent was and so on. And then he said to them, come on now, I'll give you a kiss. And Kitty, who was 11, said, I'm too old to be kissed. But Michael scooped up the two of them and gave them a big hug and a kiss. So they stayed in town a short time after that. She also remembers my grandfather warning Michael to go into the armoured car, not in the open...
The open top.
But Michael, you know, the Connellses have that streak of daring and, you know, I suppose there's something wrong with bravado in them.
Yeah.
And, of course, he thought, he was absolutely convinced nobody would shoot him in Cork.
They'd never shoot me in my own county.
Yeah. But as my mother said to me the time I went up for election, you're on the worst for you very often in these circumstances. But anyway, they went home through the fields eventually. And on their way home, interestingly enough, they called into the rector's wife, the Protestant rector there, who was a great gardener and a great friend of them, and they had scones and tea there. And then they headed back on a shortcut across the fields to Woodfield. They got home about 3 hours or later, and the news had just come that Michael had been shot.
Yeah, shocking.
And, of course, she was devastated because she had gone through the terrible trauma of the her home being burned down in her presence when she was the oldest at home.
Yeah.
That was on the 7th of February. And, of course, 2 months before that, her mother had died of TB.
Yeah.
That was very significant to her because when I got TB as a young fella, she got an awful fright altogether.
Yeah.
But Woodfield was a huge episode in their life because the Tens and General Percival of the Essex Regiment arrived. And... she was there. She got Liam, who was 3, the baby, a 3 or 4 months old, Irish people who came on, the neighbours, to try and quench the
fire.
Yeah, and anyway, this man in charge of the Essex, who was General Arthur Percival, who I met again in effigy in Singapore, because he was the man that surrendered Singapore to the Japs when they came up on bicycles behind him. But anyway, Percival came over, and he started talking to her and asked her her age and Liam's age. And Liam was jumping around with delight because the windows were bursting out with the flames and he thought it was terribly exciting.
Very exciting, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, he said, he looked at Mary, my mother, and said, what am I doing here? I have children your age, burning children out of their home. So he whistled up the Essex Regiment and marched them away. Now, he tried to get the Tens to leave, but they wouldn't.
No.
And so the thing was burned down there in her presence. Now, at the same time, her father was arrested coming... He was a Sinn Féin councillor, and he was coming from a county council meeting in Cork, and he was arrested. And he was put in first to Cork jail, then into Spike Island, and then onto Bear Island. And interestingly enough, there are a number of Listowel connections with that event of his arrest. When he was in Spike Island, he was sharing a cell with Alfred O'Reilly, who later became, of course, the Dr. Alfred O'Rahilly of Cork University.
Yeah.
And he was born in Listowel there, next to the Listowel Arms.
Right,
Hotel,
okay.
And he was a relation, of course, of Dee O'Rahilly.
Yeah.
Who was shot in Mursey. The other connection, oh yes, Alfred O'Rahilly used to write on behalf of my grandfather to my mother about the farm. Now, my grandfather had a hand injury on the farm, and the British neglected it on Spike Island, and he couldn't write. But anyway,
but he wrote for him.
So they went on then. They were shifted from there to Bear Island. And another Listowel man enters the picture there, in that there was a priest, Father Welsh from Listowel. I've never traced down, actually, what Welsh's he was.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was the priest there. They just come in and say mass to the internees. And the British made him swear a note that he would not bring in or take out messages. So cute North Kerry man, what did he do? He got his altar boy to bring in and take out the messages.
Very good, Robert. Listen, we're short on time, but look, finally and briefly, the family are generally happy, I'd imagine, with how it's been remembered. And 100 years on, the way it's being assessed now, not in one political tradition, but that we're looking at where Ireland is now 100 years on in the context of what was given up and what was sacrificed and the tragedy of 100 years ago.
Yes, it was a terrible tragedy. I think he was really a great leader. He was so energetic. He achieved so much. He had so many varied skills. You see, he was a very methodical man, as indeed was my mother. Absolutely beautiful writing. Everything had to be in order. He was very interested in art and GAA, and of course he was head of the IRB, and he was Minister of Finance. I have another story about him as Minister of Finance, but I suppose you don't have time.
No, I'm over time already.
Other time, Jerry.
We will.
Some other time,
we'll talk some other time, we will. And listen.
And what I would just advise people is there's a paperback edition now of his book, The Path to Freedom, which was published posthumously in 1922.
Right.
He had just done a foreword for it. And it's well worth reading now. It's a bit idealistic, but then he was an idealistic young man.
He was.
It's worth reading, getting as to how he saw the future of Ireland.
Yeah, it certainly
and
is.
And I'd love to do an analysis of what he would think of Ireland now.
Yeah,
indeed. Very interesting.
It would. Listen, Robert, thanks so much,
Jerry,
for talking to us, and thanks for giving us your memories, your perspectives about Robert Pearce there. And Garrod Pearce, thanks so much for coming into us as well and talking about the event itself.